James, you beautiful, glorious motherfucker, making a revolution in sustainability. Head of NutriCare, tell me why you give a fuck.
Why do I give a fuck?
sorry, that's a super broad question. you are all capable. You're putting out sustainable products on the market. Give us an example of your favorite one currently and why you think it's going to change the way we behave with our environment.
It's a combination, Jez. For me, we started with a problem-solving product with Patch and trying to solve a problem for my son. That's where it all began. He had a reaction to a wound care product, and me as a father, tearing his skin off, taking this product off his skin, cut me deep. Mm. And if you ever hurt someone close to you, especially blood, it's enough drive to do anything in the world. But I think what we're finding now from developing Patch is that this little product that we've created is helping kids get out and get off their iPads and go out and live life. It's fixing problems for people who can't wear other products on the market. And it's a feel-good business. For me, it's not really a business. It's really a mission of where we want to go and what we want to do.
Mm.
And the byproduct from all of that is literally creating products that we're actually caring for the consumer and caring for the environment with NutriCare on a level that ultimately what I want to do is remove plastic. I want to remove all these toxins. I want to remove everything with what we do with NutriCare moving forward and actually have a platform to benchmark new products into massive categories and shake them up because no one's actually thinking deep on these issues.
No.
Plastic's the worst enemy of my life. I don't want to see it in, you know, it's in everything, even the most natural or organic products that you buy off the shelf in organic stores right now, guess what? They're wrapped in plastic.
Motherfuckers.
You know, you've got black rice wrapped in plastic.
Yeah,
you've got
true.
Everything's there when we can actually think about ways of doing things differently and shape-shift the marketplace. So ultimately we want to build one but many, many products under our suite of NutriCare that we can actually take and fix a problem on an environmental level. But it's also to beyond that is how we farm it and how we make the products. This is my concern as well, and taking it beyond organics.
Mm.
So back to the way we soil turn, back to the way we actually produce the raw material to get it to the final product as well.
So you're kind of changing the whole system of product creation in a lot of ways, and it's very spiritual to me because it's like in harmony with yourself, with your environment. And I feel like once you operate in that harmony, it's an intelligent area to step into, because if you can create harmony with your environment, our species will go on longer.
100%.
As a basic first tick box.
Number one tick box. If you enjoy what you're doing and it feels good, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
So anything that makes you feel the emotion behind what's going on. If someone makes a purchase of an item or something that immediately has an impact on what their daily life is. So if you have, like, say for example, you bought some food and it made you feel good, what are you going to do? You're going to go back and buy that food.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy a product that actually feels good to yourself or the environment, and actually if we can be conscious about what we do produce and how we manufacture these things, it's an evolving segment, and it will keep on evolving as we grow, and people will love it even further.
Mm.
And I think the embracement behind the whole sustainability side of things is one aspect. But it's also how you dispose of things. But it might be great you buying organic, certified products and everything else in the market space. But if you can't dispose of that product properly and in the right way, guess what?
Mm.
You've got shit in the ocean. You've got crap in the soil. No one cares about it. If you farm something, you take all the water out of a zone or pump bottled water out of a spring, and you leave the land with no water to survive. What's that going to do?
Yeah.
And ultimately, for me, is about one, we've got an awesome product. It's working really, really well. But if I don't farm that well and I don't make that product from the start to the finish in the right format, what am I doing? I'm just basically going to become another multi that basically keeps on doing that sort of thing. So from my side, it's all about even back to the soil turn and how do we produce the product.
Beautiful, because I think that's the thing. There's two components here. It's like it's the education is a huge component of educating people on the process, so to be conscious about where their products have come from and where they're going to. And then there's the whole thing of the actual products. Like, I feel like it should just be a baseline segment in school where kids get taught the cause and effect of their footprint of what their clothes, because it's not even if, like, for example, recyclable or like compostable cups, they still take energy to produce. So that's taking, like, that's still fucking up the environment. But if you've got a one-off production, like of one mug that you can reuse and reuse and reuse, there's only one production cost or effect in that.
And also too, in something like making a one-off mug, that's you can actually engage with labour. You can actually get people to make that product. It's not a process to produce it. It's everything's a process, but it's something that it can be made with a bit of love behind it. And you look at all these poverty-stricken countries and all that sort of thing, and unfortunately, the corruption's the biggest thing that draws out of that. And corporations and corruption go hand in hand. But if you've got an aspect to try and
heartwarming.
It's ultimately we're trying to build a different style of corporation. In my mind, we're trying to be proactive with our thought process from the beginning. There's a lot of companies right now that they're panicking because they don't know what to do with this environmental discussion and how to fix it and how do they make it work for them.
Right.
So they're in a reactive mode right now.
And that's greenwashing. Like, there's a lot of greenwashing
heaps,
too,
heaps
right?
Of it, right? So we're agile and we're fresh and we're young, but we've thought about it from the... We've basically planted the seed and we're watching it grow at the moment. We're watching the way that we do things and how we dispose of things. Like, as a brand, I can't control what you or what anybody does with our product when they're finished with it.
You sure as hell try. Throw me fucking patches every opportunity.
But there's not. But as far as people can't. Well, I can't control what you do with it.
I'm joking.
I can't control what you're going to do.
Exactly.
So if I can make sure that whatever you do with it doesn't impact, or it produces something that basically, like with our patch, because it's biodegradable and it's compostable bamboo, once you're finished with it, or if you're out hiking and it falls off your arm, you haven't got a
I could fucking eat that thing and it'll be all right.
You would.
You dirty bastard. It's kind of like sustainable sex play.
But effectively, it's like, what do you do? How do you make something that you know that the end result isn't going to impact anything? So, and I think a lot of brands don't think about that. So in my mindset is really being conscious of that space. I mean, it's a very, very difficult one to control all the time, but
yes,
we can definitely make a conscious decision to always work on that modeling of the business.
I give you high revolutionary fists in the sky because you're out there on the front line making new sustainable systems within production, and making it sexy and fun, you know. Like, I think, like, if anyone looks at Patch, it's a rad product.
Yeah,
it just looks
so
cool. Like,
thank you.
I'd want to put it on my face just as a fashion accessory because it's just got a good feeling. It feels good, and I think, like you said, I think focusing on the feel good is that your main way to make these products engage with people. What are the constructs of how you? Because obviously, just to break down the intelligence that you have to have in order to go, right, I've got a good idea that will make the world better. Now I've got to bring it to people and make them actually care about it. There's a lot of things you have to juggle and consider, right? And to me, it's like, overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, you could see me smiling when you were talking about how it made you feel. That's ultimately my drive, right? If I make a product that people enjoy using, and, you know, it's like everything. You're going to have lovers and haters. But effectively, what we're finding at the moment, the momentum that we're having, is that it's a little tiny piece of fabric that protects a wound that you've had. The feedback we're getting from the consumer and the customers is simply the fact that it's healing fast and it works and there's no scarrings and issues like that. That, to me, that's... I know what I say is Patch is like a little badge of honour. Is what I put up, but that's a part of our strategy, and we live life to the fullest and we get out and live and breathe and fall over and scratch ourselves. And what we're trying to do is not in, that's just a byproduct of what's happened from patch. We want people to get out and live life and not be afraid of getting a cut or a scratch or, you know, living life.
It reminds me of that Japanese philosophy that they've got this thing where they break a plate and they put it back together and paint it with gold to stick it back together. And so it's kind of like highlighting the fracture or highlighting the crack in life.
Yep.
And I love that philosophy of, you know, like the wounds is what makes us stronger, or there's beauty in the wounds.
Yeah, look, I mean, I love that analogy. It's pretty much almost a bit like...
Are you crying, James?
Oh, a little bit, because it's quite emotional. But, you know, there's a deep line between, like, that crack in life. I've had my cracks. I was working in my family business for many years, and there was a change and shift of the business, and I was sort of left off to the side of that. And I had one choice: I could either dwell on it or do something else. And at the time, it was sitting, you know, it's a pretty emotional part for me as far as where it was, and being in a family business, then all of a sudden they don't want you in that business because it was a different mindset of the way they wanted to take the journey, and that was an emotional part for me. But at that time, I had that time out, and if my son Charlie hadn't have fallen over and actually cut himself on his stomach, and then had that, it just, things happen in a really weird, funky way. It's a journey. Without that crack, I wouldn't have had this point.
Amazing.
Without, you know, if you've got to look at the respective, you know, what's happened in the last 2 years since we've developed Patch, and where it's gone from kitchen bench to full production to hitting the shelves only in October last year, which is just over 12 months, and now we're in 25 countries. We've got people writing into us every day, and I'm talking, they're writing into us with blocks of content. It's taking these people 5 to 15 minutes to put together these thank yous, and it's amazing. Like, we've got a kid that's over in America right now, AJ, who's dying of cancer, and he can't wear adhesives on his skin because of all the chemo and everything else he's going through, and we've kept up to date with him, and we've followed him on his journey, and we're helping. You know, we sent a whole lot of stuff over to him in the beginning. It's a little thing, but he's like, the feedback and the from the mother and everything else is just awesome. We've dropped stock into Haiti. We've supported kids in Haiti with the schools through a very close friend of mine, Phil Lay, and Retail Global, and supported his charity operations with that. We've supported young veterans with East Timor. We've got products going over to the front line over in Iraq with special operations. It's like, it's wicked. It's, you can't, the journey that we've created, the energy we're creating with this, is, it's just taking it to another level. So without that crack in the road for me, I wouldn't be here.
Amazing.
So you've got to look at those cracks, and seriously, there's a big thing to learn from that, is that the cracks are what, they're your lessons. They're the ones that teach you how to grow and how to, they're not the negative side of life. They're actually the positives that you stem out of it.
Mm.
So I look at it at a, if I fall over, I look at that as, oh, shit, I'm not going to do that again.
Mm.
You know, it's a mark in my mind of how I got to that point and what happened, rather than thinking about, oh, shit, I fell over. Oh, fuck. I can't do this. Oh, no, I'm not right. Ow, you know.
Yeah.
I'll think about, okay, well, shit, how did I do it? I'll just rewind the clock a little bit. It's almost, in a way, a bit of meditation, like a bit of meditation. Like, sort of, you stop, you switch off, disconnect, and then get back into it. So it gives you that process to help move forward. But I've had an awesome life with everything I've done thus far, and then it was a big rock that I fell over with what happened. But it was about, for me, keeping the family together and making the choice that, okay, if the family wants to stay together, then maybe I've got to bow down and move out of this situation. Without doing that, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. And, you know,
dude,
it's wicked.
It's really fucking gets you right in the eye, that story. Because it's, for me, I've had a similar story in a different way. But like that thing, reframing these trips,
yep,
is a super empowering thing that we need to, normal people need to know about, you know?
Yeah.
Because as soon as you realize that your trip or your fall over or the crack is the very thing, the very, very, very thing that is going to allow you to expand, grow, go in a new greater direction.
They're not trips.
They're not trips anymore. No. They're not cracks. They're actually, holy fuck, I've been blessed with an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's not wild to say. That's actually the truth of what it is at its greatest potential.
Yeah.
Because at the poorest potential, it is those things as well, of like feeling shitty, feeling victim-y. Mm. It will even make you or break you. I mean, these philosophies are old, aren't they?
There's no harm in rehashing them. They work in a way that, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about the method of life and method of business and everything else. My best MBA I could ever do in my life was when I wound the company down. I went through the whole process of what's involved legally, accounting-wise, everything else that went through. I held my head up high and I paid out everything out of the business to hold my head up high.
Mm.
I didn't have to do that. I could have fallen in a heap and gone, oh, shit.
Did you feel, and you would have felt like that?
Of course I felt like that.
Yeah.
But my drive was to basically to get out of that situation. I'm sort of one of those guys that you give me a bone, I won't stop chewing on it. Like, literally, I've got to get... That's my target. That's my goal. Even though I don't meet that much these days.
Mm.
But it's...
You've clearly expanded massively in the last couple of years every time I catch up with you.
Yeah, well, it's really trying to harness that. For me, it's all about the culture now with what we do and where we go. We started in the kitchen bench and in the garage at home in Mount Eliza. We've now got 39 people working globally on NutriCare. If you put the factories into play, there's 450 people globally working on our products. So it's like, that's happened in 3 years, man. And we've only been literally on the shelf for the last, since or the, pretty much the main bulk of the global reach has only happened since August, September last year. So it's phenomenal.
It's amazing.
I think if we can... have a path of success for everybody that's involved with it and share that road with everybody that's involved with it. It doesn't matter what we do.
What are your, with your vision, what's the biggest boundaries or red tapes around limiting the implementation of your vision?
Probably the boundaries that we have are...
fucking government, I bet.
I wouldn't say the government. I'd say more, yes. In a way, I was about to say making sure that, you know, we're in a space whereby perfect scenario. Patch is using certified organic components. We're making it with all the right componentry. We're making it in the right format with no child labour and all the right support. We've got everything documented, but there's no category for us to be certified organic.
Right.
So there's no first aid category. So my thing is lobbying to try and get certified organic in the wound care category, which to date there's nothing there. So there's ointments and things like that, but because we're a medical device, there's no category in the wound care category for to be certified.
Mm.
So that's the challenge of breaking the mold. We're going into so many different categories as we expand. We've got wicked R&D going on right now and products that are coming out into...
Research and development for anyone non-biz people out there.
So, but we've got some just... simple mindset retakes on common products that minimise all the crap out of it, you know, and taking it back to basics. And as we build, as your shisha.
So we're in a park for anyone that's listening. That's why you hear train every once in a while and birds and kids running around.
So the thing for me is it's literally the challenge is that it's trying to lobby where we need to lobby and bring out products that can disrupt the categories, think quick on the feet. We're going to be an agile company, keeping it sharp and smart and fun and rewarding. It's, you know, if you think about your staff that come into your work and into your workplace on a daily basis, they're spending more time with you than what they do with their family these days. Because if they're passionate, they're supportive about what we're doing as a vision, which I've got I'm very, very lucky that I have got people around me like that, they're devoted, right? So they're with us from, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day just because they want to be there, because they want to get to that next point. Mm. So you've got to reward that person and that energy behind where you're going, because without them, you're just a guy running around going, hey, I've got a patch or I won't bandage or whatever you want to put on on the people. It doesn't install that confidence to the consumer as well, and then you won't get sales and the ripple effect happens. So for me, it's about, it's all about culture and how we build the brand and globally strong as well. So we want the right foundations to move forward.
Because you just started movements in America, right?
Yeah, so I'm basing over in America from January next year.
Wicked.
We've just, it's funny how things happen. I've met up with an old friend of mine who I've known for 20 plus years, who's living in New York now. He's taken products into America, he knows the American landscape, and funnily enough, we just caught up in New York on the last trip when I was over there, and he showed interest in what we were doing, and push comes to shove, and now we've just appointed him as the VP for the US operation. So it's like wicked. I've got some really cool people, people that we can trust as we're growing. So I'm going to go over there and support him in America for a bit of a term next year, and build, obviously educate the market in America. Europe's gone absolutely crazy for the product. Just got back from Europe with a pharmaceutical expo over there in Sweden and Munich, and I won't say how many people were waiting in a line pretty much on the stand every day, but it was pretty out of control.
Let's just say it was plus 10,000.
Well, if you think about anyone in Melbourne who knows where we are and what the size of Jeff's shed is, there was basically six halls the size of Jeff's shed.
Incredible.
And we had a little stand off. It was basically in the side run of the
wedged
show.
In. Yeah.
And there was probably 20 to 50 people lined up wanting to find out what the product, how they can get the product and what that was. And they were doctors and pharmacists and medical space. They're not the public.
Great.
And they just love what we were doing. So,
man, amazing.
It's really wicked.
It's so thrilling to see it just resonate. And it just goes to show that you're meeting people at the expanding state of their awareness of how we can make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And you're providing them with a solution. It's like when you get, my mate, the guy that runs MyVote.
Yep.
I'm so fucking thrilled someone's thinking of a system of democracy that's actually works.
Yep.
Awesome. Like you get so thrilled when you see people doing.
When you're living where we are now, in the state we are now, whereby we're on a mobile phone all the time, why hasn't MyVote been put into play before? It's such a wicked concept, and it's like when it comes to fruition, it's an amazing, powerful tool. The problem is with that tool is that if it gets in the wrong hands and the person that's untrusted that's running it, that's when the cracks break. Even to the top levels of the big five, auditing firms, you've got to worry about the level of trust of who's doing what. So if MyVote gets to that stage, and I really hope it does, because it's, you wouldn't trust the government if you went and voted on it, but you would trust it if it was regulated. Or the problem is there's fors and against for each one of these firms. So whether or not you do a collaboration, and if they're all going to audit the same data to get honest and truth out, that'd be the best way. But I love the concept of that. I reckon it's a great tool.
What other areas that are you excited about pushing into that you're allowed to talk about now in terms of other products? Because I know you've talked about a few different things to me.
Yeah, we're still working down the path of working with non-plastic solutions into componentry like packaging and using tapioca-based products to format. I probably can't say too much, but there's some formatting of general consumer type products that would be literally, you could buy it, it feels like plastic, you use it like plastic, and you can bury it in the garden.
Right. And what was it, tapioca? What's that?
Tapioca. So tapioca is a starch. It's like your tapioca pearls.
Oh, yeah.
So they basically produce a film out of that, and and we're working with injection molding in that space.
Right.
We're looking at the packaging, we're looking at the componentry about what we put into the products, and just disrupting generally the landscape, listening to what the consumer wants rather than what the retailer, in a way, we've got to have that balance. But if we're producing good quality products that work and they do what they say and they've got that the nice flow-on effect back to the environment, back to the consumer. That's what NutriCare is all about. It's about caring for the consumer and caring for the environment.
How do you farm those kind of, ultimately, with like tapioca?
Tapioca.
How do you farm that sustainably?
It's very, very easy to farm. It's you know, there's multiple. It's more in abundance, to be honest. It's grown in regions like India and those sort of markets. It's a real hot climate type growth. But it's ultimately, once again, it's what's been done with it after that. A lot of the, you can see there's a I'm Not Plastic bag at the moment over in Bali. And there's bags, there's products like that. That's basically from a tapioca starch. The problem with a lot of the componentry that comes out of that space in Indonesia and those areas is they still use palm oil.
Right.
So palm oil is pretty much like the byproduct of farming, but it's a dirty space.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You can buy organic and certified and basically sustainably sourced palm oil, but unfortunately, once it's ended up in a barrel, who's saying, you know, it's up to the trust of you to the supplier. Unless you're watching that process, I guarantee you 9 times out of 10, even the organic certified componentry, they're probably growing crops right next to crops that are being sprayed, and you're getting the flow-on effect from it. You're getting the water washed down. And
right.
That's where we're talking about with the Beyond Organic movement that's happening now. I've just been put onto the Climate Collaborative over in America and also to the Sustainability Council of America. And the two things that they're working with very heavily right now is beyond organics. So beyond that farming, it's looking at the soil turn and how do we do things better and how do we do things that doesn't impact. So you just don't know. You've got to trust your source. And unfortunately, there's a couple of the big groups out there that you sort of, you know, and that's what we're trying to do is we're going to move in and disrupt that space.
Yeah, man. I mean, like when I was in the States recently, I had a banana that was organic and then a banana that's not non-organic, and they tasted identical.
Yeah.
Like, and in Australia, you can really taste the difference between a lot, like avocados, particularly when they're organic.
How'd you find the fruit in California?
Oh, sugary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so the Californian side of things, I mean, I always look at these, the videos that you see, like with detrimental impact on environment or farming and what's going on with crop dust, all this sort of stuff that's all over the web these days. Everybody sees it and reads it and gets shocked by everything every now and then with inhumane ways of doing things. But I've always said it's only in America in my mind. And then you look at other markets like in Europe and you look how things are used and grown. I'm very fortunate to have a very, very supportive person advising us on our board that he was basically bringing organic food into retail grocery back in the 70s. And, mate, you can imagine the journey he had dealing with a pear that looks like an orange or a strawberry that looks like a grapefruit, you know, like with a nose on it. Like, it's all of that sort of thing. You think about, my journey's only been paved because what he's done to get it to this point. So
cool.
You look at the fruits and the foods, it's how do you know whether or not there's been... You just don't know. It's the trust of the source. So it's a real hard one. And I think farmers are copying it a lot at the moment. I think the whole focus around the organic space is it's over-regulated in a way. The fact that I can't get a certified organic componentry product certified organic pisses me off, and it's only because if I pay money I'll be able to get it done. But it's still, we'll pay the money to get the stamp, but there's no category. So why won't you open a category? I know, because if we do that, there's not enough demand for it, so they're not going to make enough money out of that certification for us to have it, which pisses me off.
All right. So
it's really the trust of the source, and we'll keep on lobbying that space as hard as we can to build that up. And that'll come from support from government, and probably back on backlashing where you were going back before, but it'll happen with the USDA and those markets when we hit the American market. But it's one very frustrating part of the business at the moment. It's how do we... And that's where I'm sort of taking things that I've had back from Don, is about how do we take it to... How do we push the envelope a little bit and get the approval that we can do to sell the products of what they are?
What's a good way for people out there when buying products to have a good gauge on if a thing is, a product is somewhat greenwashed with like a corporation that's, you know, like saying it's all these amazing sustainable things when in actual fact it's not?
In the respect of what you look on the landscape, I still believe that if you want organic food, drive to a farm, pick it yourself, you know. It's one of the reasons why I moved down to Mount Eliza with the family, is to get away from the city, and we've got farms at the backyard. We're fortunate enough to have farms at the backyard to actually do that. But there's so many cool farmers markets and farmer drops supply that you can actually get outside of the mainstream. I think mainstream, you just got to, unfortunately, they're so heavily regulated, you've got to sort of trust them in a way. What I don't like is you see all the organic food is all the food, almost every supermarket is wrapped in plastic. Why aren't all the other foods wrapped in plastic and the organic food aren't wrapped in plastic? Why? Because it costs. Why? Because, you know, it's more waste. But why do they still need to do it that format? Surely there's enough space to think about better ways to do that segment of the supermarket. And if the more we think about, the more brands like Patch come along, and we're a little brand in a big space. Like we're like a little drop in the ocean for a retail chain, but the category is massive. This disruption around that category that we can actually make in the way that we don't want to go in there and compete. I want to go in there and lift. So I want to go in there as basically a supporting product to what's already there to help lift the category up. So if I take that approach and take that non-competing, everybody's going to buy other products, but basically if we can lift a category by fixing a problem, or lift a category because the energy and the product's good, and lift a category because we've got a good meaning behind the product and people like it, or lift the category because it looks shit hot on the shelf, that's what I want to do. I don't want to go in there and go, oh, we're better than them, and you don't need to use that product because we do this better, and they're all doing that. They're caught up in their own little cycle of, you know, their mindsets about, oh, we're better than them, we're better than them, we're better than them. So it's a tennis match going on there. While they're doing that, we're going in there and going, right, here's a fresh approach. This is what it does, and here's the people we can bring in to help you as a retail. That's the approach that I'll take every time. It's a lot more ethical. A lot more fun. And it's a lot more fun hearing people like yourself or customers coming back to me saying, that was like, I love the product and da-da-da-da. Like, it's just amazing. Like, the level of people that are supportive to what we're doing right now, I don't think any of those bigger groups could actually get that someone to write a letter in to say, thank you so much. Doesn't happen. It's something that they have to do. That they have to buy it to use it. But they've got that no emotional connection to the product. That's what we've got right now, and that's where we're harnessing that to build it out. So ultimately, I'd love to lobby into areas of change in supermarket. I've got an idea for the organic space tomorrow that would be a very easy one for them to implement. And the more we deal with them, the more we talk to them, the more we engage with them, you know, there's a bit of pushback, but the buyers are totally different to the environmental structural person that's behind the supermarket too. So we want to work with them. We want to make sure that we can actually make a change, because the more I can change it, even looking at a product like Macro Foods, it's fantastic. They've taken organic commercial and they've got a big, but they're still doing things wrong with that product, you know, in that space. There's other ways you can do things that can minimise your packaging waste, that can minimise the impact of the environment, they can change the way that we perceive a product. So for example, you walk you're walking down the street, why do we have shop windows?
So robbers don't steal the stuff.
Is it because of that, or is it to say you can actually engage with the product that's there?
I that too.
Why do they dress shop windows?
Fuck, I grew up in East London, so everything's like stab, stab, nick, nick.
Yeah. but like, why do we have shop windows? Why do we dress up a shop window for someone to walk past? It's enticing. It's that emotional connection you get to say, I want to look like that, or I want to buy those runners, or whatever it is that sparks that emotion for you to buy. So if we can take the mentality of thinking about that shop window out of play and just saying organic apples in a brown box, would you buy it?
Yeah.
So
I mean, I would. I haven't gone to Coles or Woolworths in about 2 years because all the food tastes the same.
Yeah.
Like, it just tastes like mush in my mouth. It doesn't taste any flavour. So I'm over that shit. Like, farmers market, Terra Madre, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But If you look around the world at the moment, what countries, what people, when do you reckon this boom? Because everyone's obviously expanding their state of awareness, being more conscious. Like the middle, particularly the middle class, I guess, is like had all their needs met, and so they're looking for meaning now, looking for purpose, looking for more intelligent solutions that will uplift everyone else, help everyone else.
I think the big problems that we've got in the world, as far as the environmental and the rubbish and the byproduct of bags getting washed in the water and all this sort of stuff, it doesn't come from here. We're a bunch of lazy slobs here.
Yes.
Americans are a bunch of lazy slobs. Everything comes in packets, but they're making a conscious decision about change, and you do notice that when you're over there. The homelessness is the biggest problem in America at the moment, and you would have witnessed that recently as well. But the biggest problem here in Australia, we're not the ones causing the problems with bags in the water. We're just a bunch of lazy slobs that don't use the bin. The biggest problems are the uneducated markets like Indonesia. I'm not naming names, but Indonesia and Haiti. And these markets, whereby if you look at what's disposed of, if you go to Indonesia, you go anywhere in Indonesia, you order a bottle of water, plastic. You order, you buy a pen, plastic. Everything's got plastic. It's their nature. It's a cultural thing, right?
Yeah.
It's their mentality that they need to help you carry that product or what you're buying. So the education's got to start back there, not worrying about what's actually... You know, we've got to clean the water up. We've got to clean that environment up. But it's not coming from... You don't see bag loads of trash running out of the waterways. I mean, you do sometimes in the Yarra. You see bikes getting thrown in there, which I think's fucking disgusting. I think these smart asses that are running around throwing these bikes... The bikes are being brought in for people to use.
Oh, dude.
You know, do you know how many kids are sitting over in Ethiopia and South Africa have got nothing?
What the fuck is wrong with Melbourne kids?
And mate, it's like I've got a... Phil Layer, who I mentioned before from Retail Global, is also involved with a charity whereby they send bikes in containers with Emily Butler, and they basically break the bikes down and they send them over to underprivileged children in regions around the world. And I think I'm pretty certain it's called Bikes for Life. She's awesome, man. It's like then you drive past and you see 15 bikes in the Yarra River, but it's not just here. It's in China. They're doing it in China. They're throwing them up on top of things. And in America, they've got those lime scooters. How good
and birds. They're like electric scooters.
Yeah, the birds.
Yeah.
Have you seen what they're doing?
I'd love them.
Yeah, but you see what they're doing in America?
They're trashing them a little bit.
They're trashing them.
But not if they were put in Melbourne, I guarantee they'd like the company would have like crashed straight away.
I still don't know how the company makes money the way they
do. Dude, they're worth like a few billion now, aren't they?
But it's like, and they're only over there. It's like.
But electric scooters, that's a wicked solution. For me, it's like, it's just, what is it? Like, this privileged, entitled cunts.
Yeah.
Excuse my language, there's some kids in the park. But it makes me cross because it's just this, and it contributes to this narrow mind of not taking responsibility for what it is to be a human being.
No, like there's people in the world that need these things, and these smart asses are bloody running around trashing them. It's like,
gross.
It's actually beyond gross. It's like you look at the level of what was happening with these bikes and things around the world, and I was literally in China a few months back, the same thing was happening there. It's like, who are you? Why are you doing it? And if you want to do that type of thing, like,
just chop your own arm off and throw that in the river.
It just doesn't make any sense. Like, from that perspective, there's so much waste that's going on. Companies are trying to make money, so they're coming up with new concepts, and then you get a smart ass, one or two smart asses that come along and think they're being cool and doing something radical with it, but it's, you know, it's just sheer waste. And you think about cost of footprint to make that product environmentally. Okay, so they've got metal involved, you've got carbon, you've got coal, you've got all these other elements that have made, got the product to be a bike, which is used up consumption on energy, and it's also used up toxic waste in the air and everything else that's been produced, rubber and everything else that's been produced on that level. And then you've got these fuckers going around trashing the joint when they should be there's no respect.
Where's the break? Is it the lack of education? Is it the
I think it's
because I'm a bit over Australia without not hating on it too much, but compared to there's places in the world where, like, particularly California is so progressive in their thinking, so many intelligent people doing intelligent.
Sounds like you're coming over with us.
Yeah, I want to. And then I come back to Melbourne and there's just the wall and, like, conservative. Mm. Like, everyone's so conservative in their thinking here.
Mm.
And no wonder we're not, like.
Well, what I find the culture difference between here and America is the fact that in America, everyone wants to see you do well. Everyone's about, hey, man, well done. You know, everyone gives you that. Everyone's boosting each other's confidence unintentionally,
mm.
but that's the culture of America.
Mm.
You get some haters, but you get some real ones there. Like if you've got a really cool idea and you're going to market, everyone's like, hey, everyone wants to basically get you going.
Yeah.
Whereas over here, if you've got an idea, they go, oh, there's always that, do you reckon it will work there?
Yeah.
There's never that mindset to go, fuck, that's going to go really well.
Yeah, which is such a shame.
You know, it's the same thing in Europe, same thing in America, same thing in Asia. Everything's just
progressive.
They're embracive, you know, and over here it's more that, you're exactly breaking back that conservative model, that it's that mindset of going,
all they're really doing, if you had to put it down another way, is they're just celebrating the fact that they don't want to take a risk.
Or the fact that they haven't got the balls to go and do it. You know, basically, it's but they don't want to say that. You know, it's an insecure thing.
Mm.
Gotta love it.
Love it.
That's the best. but you know, it stems down to an insecurity rather than anything else.
Because
if you think about the world's not a big place.
Mm.
Like, the world's literally like in the last. Since July last year, I've travelled 240,000 kilometres, which
wow.
is, you know, to the moon and back.
By or foot,
if you
too.
if you go around the world, it's, you know, we're 40,000. I think the world's about 40,000 kilometres around the world.
Mm.
So it's not a big place.
Mm.
It's not that hard to tap a market. It's not that hard to get involved with a region. It's how you embrace the culture. Every market that you go to, if you've got that cultural embracement, you learn the culture and give them the respect of what you've... You might know everything, but you know... at least the way they want to work and the way they want to think.
Mm.
And that gets installed from my business partner with Zach as well. His knowledge of culture is fantastic. And that stems down to, how do you deal with the Chinese? How do you deal with India? How do you deal with Europe? How do you deal with, you know, the Germans are different from the Italians that are different. You know, so it's all about if you can put a little bit of emphasis about, and that's really how I built my distribution up now, and how quickly we've done it, is because we know who we want. We know how to find them, and we know how to almost talk to them in the right language. So if everything, the product's singing on product's a product, right? So the product's hot and everyone loves it, but it's how you deliver that and supply that to them as well.
Mm,
so for me, it's change isn't that hard to do.
No.
It's just, there's a lot of activists out there, which I'm not a big fan of. I don't like the fact that they go out there in a hatred mode. Like Sea Shepherd with us, with what we, I mean, I hate to sort of align those two things together, but with Sea Shepherd, I was embraced by Sea Shepherd because I simply called them up off the phone, went down to their office and said, hey, I've got something which is bamboo, it'll break down in the water, and it's a wound care product, do you have them on your ships? Next year, you know, they want us on all the fleets and they're getting off all the other products off their ships, and now we're supportive of them moving forward to make, you know, I like the fact of people supporting each other. I don't like the people that are running around going, I hate this, I hate that.
Mm.
Or your hatred, you know.
It's not productive.
Hate's not productive at all. You know, what are you going to do with hate? There's nothing there to evolve where we want to go as a human race. It's step one of
evolution, but it's stage one, you know. Like, if you want to go to stage two and actually... do something significant and heal the broken systems.
We're not the godsend. We're not the experts.
I know we are. We're at least stage three. Well, you are.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, why run around hating things when you actually go and embrace it and actually turn something from love into something that's giving back love as well. And that's, I know it sounds a bit mythical around a product, but that's ultimately what we're trying to do with Patch. We've created a product I could have created it out of hate of another product and had a whole tangent about I'm never going to use XYZ brand ever again. And this is why XYZ brand's crap. But it's not about that for me. It was like, this is a problem. It mightn't have been the product. It might have been componentry. It might have been this. I've tried other products on him and it didn't work. Mm. But I haven't created a product out of hate. I've created a product out of a need. And the need is now turning into a reciprocal love relationship now that we're having with consumers and the product being on the shelf and the people talking about it. It's coming. That's the energy coming back to us.
Mm.
So from that energy, it's driving the team to take it to the next stage.
Great.
And for us, it's, you know, we don't make a charitable donation from what you buy of my product. So I don't want to hold you. I'll use the words of a friend of mine here, but I don't want to hold a charity.
You can say it was me.
I don't want to hold a charity to ransom, right? And it's exactly what she drummed into me. Why do you want to hold a charity at ransom for someone to buy your product? So if you buy my product, I'll donate $1 to this charity. Why do I want to make you feel bad in that way of buying my product? You might feel good that you've donated money to the charity, right? But I've made you have to do that. I forced my product into your hands.
Mm.
So what we want to do with NutriCare and Patch as we grow and other products that we've got is just support growth by basically doing a drop. So there's an earthquake in Somalia or wherever around the world.
Yeah.
We'll just air freight stock in and help the kids.
Mm.
Mm. Well, there's a fire in California. We'll just air freight stock in and help the people after the fire.
Mm.
You know, the little things that you can do along the way are a lot more powerful on a charitable level behind Patch and what we're going to do with moving forward. We're a wound care product, so we need to be at disaster zones. We need to be, it might be just like a little thing, but we're building out bigger products and bigger formats. But it's that sort of level of help. If people know that we do that proactively as a brand in the background, I don't need to basically say, you give me a dollar for every product. You know, I was going to take a dollar out of every product and give it to a charity, which is going to use 85% of that dollar in their management fees and then give a 15th back to the charity in question. Yeah. You can't measure that. You don't even know, will I give them a dollar?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what's happening at the moment. The greenwashing factor is coming from the charity angle as well as being what's in the product. So there's a whole lot of things there that I don't like in that space, and they're the things that we're going to be making change with.
Lovely. Love it. I love the sophisticated nature of it and the creativity of it. It's,
well, you got to think like that. If you don't think creatively these days, what are we?
Stupid idiots that throw O-bikes in the river.
Well, that's exactly right.
Man, James, thank you so much for sharing your story so openly, fearlessly. And beautifully. It re-enthused my enthusiasm for like what it is that you're doing. And I've really loved since we've met and watching how you've expanded. Like you're just like a fucking bulldog. Just again, just straight. And it's on such a mission that is really supporting the best in everyone. That's what I love about it. You're a real innovator for uplifting everyone's bestness.
all we can do is try.
Yeah.
So if we install that, and we can then try that with where we go and what we do, and you know where we end up in a park talking to Jez. That's ultimately what we want to do. So that's awesome. Thanks for your time, man.
Pleasure. And by the way, you've just reached the pinnacle of your feel goodness in this park talking to me.
Send. I have. I've hit the top of the tree now. That's it. No more looking back.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you.